Today we want to talk about how, almost an obvious point, but that the Lord Jesus Christ is a real man. He's a real human being, and is tempted like us. He partook of blood and flesh just like we did, and he faced life in a very similar way. Because we are men, we're human beings, and he was a real human being. It's good to talk about this because it's very easy to have a thought. You know, there's this spiritual person that I want to attain to. Some kind of person that, you know, if I'm doing well, or if a spiritual person does well, kind of floats about 4 feet above the ground. No problems. Never at a point where that person is confused or perplexed about a situation. Never, tempted overly or never succumbs to temptation. Never faces the trials in life. And there's some kind of thought of like, there's my life and with my struggles. And then there are the high standards of this spiritual person. And I wish I could just get there. Well, if you're in a person like this, you kind of like miss this one point that Jesus is a real man. A real man. I was at a dinner with a bunch of medical people with my wife. This was a few years ago, and I was talking, you know how you talk around the table, there's eight of you, and you try to figure out what to say in those conversations. And so I was like, are you a Christian? I was talking to this one woman there, and she said, yeah, she's really discouraged. She said, I used to spend 1 hour in the closet praying every day. I was like, whoa, that's pretty impressive. I was like, don't ask me how many. And then something happened to me. She had a baby. You know, it wasn't a mistake. She had a, you know, whatever. But she had to take care of this baby, and she couldn't spend the hour in the closet anymore praying for 1 hour. And she was lamenting how wonderful her Christian life used to be and how it was now with this limitation. You know what she didn't see? She didn't see that Jesus Christ is a real human being. Real human being. Real human being. Now, I'd like to talk about this real human being being able to interact, interface, be a part of every angle of our life. Think of all of your temptations. Think of all of your struggles. Think of all of your darkness. And think of this. Jesus Christ is a real man and can be there right beside you. Why? Because he's a man. He's a human being. Now, I'm not talking about purpose. I'm not talking about purpose of life. I want to emphasize what Peter shared last week. You know, the purpose of your life is not your job. Your job is not the purpose of your life. No. The purpose of your life cannot be to build up Pan Am. You know what Pan Am is? Who knows what Pan Am is? Yeah, all the older people know. It was a company that was, wasn't it pretty impressive, Lois? It was huge. And now, we don't even know. It's gone. The purpose of your life is not to build up Pan Am. You know, the purpose of a Christian's life is this. The purpose of my life is to build the church. Yeah. Purpose of my life is to fulfill God's purpose. And then I also work for Pan Am. It doesn't mean don't work for Pan Am. But realize, my purpose is not to fulfill, further the bottom line of Pan Am. My purpose of life is to build the church, is to be for God's eternal purpose. And then I also do things in my life that are necessary. I like to talk about How Jesus relates to every aspect of that life, every temptation. And Jesus wanted us to hear this. That's why, you know, many times on his ministry on earth, things around him would force him to say, "You're God, you're God." And he would respond, "I'm a man, I'm a man." Because it's really important. One time when he was in the trial, at the end of his life, the high priest said this to Jesus, "Tell us, are you the Christ, the Son of God?" This is what Jesus says. It's written in your program, Matthew 26, 64. Jesus said this. Jesus said to him, "You have said so." So in other words, you've said so. You said this. "But I tell you," listen to me, listen to what angle Jesus is going to say, "but I tell you, from now on, you will see," what? "The Son of Man seated at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven." It's almost like this. The high priest was saying this, "Tell me, are you the Son of God?" And Jesus responds, "You know what? From now on, you will see the Son of Man." And where is that Son of Man going to be? That Son of Man is going to be seated at the right hand of power and coming in the clouds. It's like Jesus was saying this. You know, it's nothing for God to do marvelous, miraculous things. It's nothing. Everyone knows God can do this. But let me tell you the amazing thing. Can you put a man there? Can you make a man seated at the right hand? And can you make a man come with power on the clouds? Let me tell you, if you can do that, that is amazing. And so people around him, even the devil, when he tempted Jesus, he was always trying to push him. "If you're the Son of God, do this." And what did Jesus respond? "No, man shall not live on bread alone. Look at this man." It's almost like Jesus was screaming, "I'm a man! A real man. A real man." I'd like to open your thoughts for a little bit about just how amazing man is. And when I say man, I mean men and women. So, you know, work with me. Listen to what God thinks about men. Man, man. Hebrews 2, 5-6. "For it was not to angels that God subjected the world to come, of which we are speaking. It has been testified somewhere, 'What is man that you are mindful of him, or the Son of Man that you care for him? You made him for a little while lower than the angels, crowned him with glory and honor, putting everything in subjection under his feet.'" Let me tell you what God thinks about, according to this verse. You know, this verse says that God's mind is full of something. You know what God's mind is full of? Can anybody answer from this verse? No. Man. God's mind is full of man. It's almost like he created man. Like, and the psalmist here is a, you know, it's a quote from Hebrews, quoting the Psalms, and you know, the person from the Psalms is looking at all the stars of the heavens, like, "What? Wow, when I see the stars, the work of your hand." And then he thinks, "Wait a minute, why, God, is your mind full of man? Of man." God's mind is full of man. It's almost like he made this creation, human beings. He made man, and he just can't get that man out of his mind. "Why do you even care about man?" That's what the psalmist asks. But his mind is just full. Full. Not angels. The Hebrew says, no, it's not like God is thinking about angels. He's thinking about human beings. It's not like God is thinking about miraculous things, spiritual things. No, he's thinking about this wonderful creation called man. Man. When you look in the mirror, you should say this: you're the man. Yeah. Yeah. You're a man. Wow. Good job. Good job for being a man. Why? Because God's mind is thinking about that. And if you look at the Bible, you know the Bible it's a book describing God. It describes God. If you want to know about God, you should read this book. And if you look at this book, there are teachings. Yes, there are teachings. If you look at this book, there are warnings. Yes, there are warnings. But I would say if you look at this book, what do you mainly see? You mainly see man. God chose to show himself through this wonderful person called man. God doesn't say, you know, doesn't just give us a rule book. You know, if you believe in me, you'll be justified. You know what God does? He says, hey, look, there's this guy called Abraham. And Abraham went through all of these experiences, and he believed God, and it was counted to him as righteousness. So you look, you know, what about, you know, how do you describe God in terms of faith? Look at Abraham. And he doesn't, you know, say about, you know, God will give you patience, endurance, but he makes this man, Job, go through all these experiences, lose his family, lose his possessions, lose his health, and still, you know, exhibit this endurance. And God's like, look at that. Look at that. I worked something of myself in Job. And now you see something. And he, you know, he doesn't tell you, just have a heart according to me. And instead, he says, hey, look at this guy. His name is David. He's short, red. Is he red, ruddy? Something, I don't know. Maybe that's another one. He's short. He makes big mistakes. But you know what? His heart was according to me. And you know, if you want to look at what my heart is, you look at this person called David. And then if you want to see more, look at this person called Paul. If you want to see more, look at this person called Peter. Let me tell you, if you look at the New Testament, it's not, or the Old Testament, New Testament, it's not mainly this list of rules or this description of doctrine. It's like, it's a living person. And it's kind of like this. God has this big thought. Wow, there's a human being. And you know what that human being can do? That human being can express who I am. Like nothing else. I sometimes wonder, God, if I were you, I would do it differently. If I were you and I would want salvation to be proclaimed to this earth, I would just make clouds. Cloud writing in a language everyone can understand. And you just write it up there, Jesus Christ is Lord. And you try to get rid of it, no one can. And why didn't God just do that? Instead, you know what he does? He says, like, Chris, come here. Chris. Instead, he says this, you know what? I am going to display to the world who I am, and I am going to use
Chris.
Chris, have you ever made a mistake?
Yeah.
Chris, have you ever set a goal and not met it?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I thought you just said God was going to use you to explain to the world who he is.
I'm confused.
It's amazing. You know why? God doesn't do the clouds in the sky or a mountain, because all of that stuff is not a man. But you know what Chris is? He is a man. And when you look at it, when you look at Chris, you know what God's mind is full of? He's not full of clouds in the sky. He's not full of Jupiter. He's not full of thinking about all this stuff. He is full of, like, Chris. Man. What is man that you are mindful of him? Or the Son of Man that you care for him? Why? Because, wow, I made man in my image. Chris, you're amazing. You're absolutely amazing. Why? Because God can reveal himself through you. Unlike any other thing, unlike any list of rules, unlike any commandments, it's all partial. It's all, you know, but then Jesus Christ, when he came, you know what? He was a real man. And that's amazing. Thank you. You can sit down. So what God would do is this. Send the man through a little, you could say, process, pathway, along a pathway. And let me tell you what that pathway is. It's this. Verse 7, you made him for a little while lower than the angels. Okay, God made man for a little while lower. Lower than the angels. But it doesn't stop there. You crowned him with glory and honor. Wow. This is God's thought. God's thought is not like, okay, you're this little dog, and he's like, and you're about to be squashed by Satan. And so he just throws you a bone, protects you, and now this little dog is somehow protected, but there's still God who is very different from him. No, this is it. This is God's thought of man. You made him for a little while lower than the angels, but crowned him with glory and honor, putting everything in subjection under his feet. Think about it. Everything. So, okay. Then let me ask you a question. This is not verging. This is not, you know, it's not heretical. Who's on the throne here? It's God. Who's crowned with glory and honor? It's man. Who is made everything subject here to man? Man. What is God's thought? God's thought is, you know, he already has a throne. God already has a throne. He's not being displaced from his throne. It's not like that. But his thought is this. You know, I want to take this man, this human, and I want to, for a while, make him lower than the angels, and then crown him with glory and honor, and put everything subject to him. Put everything under his feet. You know what I say that is? That is amazing. You know, it says glory. It's like crowned with glory. And glory can mean a lot of things. You know, you could say glory. Some commentators say glory is God expressed. Other people say glory is this. God has a thought in his heart. And then when that thought is lived out or fulfilled, then that is glory. Other people say glory is a shining of the divine being. I would say in this case, I don't know about all those definitions, but you could say this. When there's a crown of glory, everything is subject to that person. Everything is under. He's been crowned with glory. God's thought is this. He's like, you see that man? I have a great intention for him. What's my intention for him? I want to crown him with glory and honor. Put everything under his feet. And then, yeah, sure, he's got problems. But I am going to do it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. Who is crowned in this instant? It's man. What is my destiny as a Christian? It's to be crowned with glory and honor, to be in glory, and to have all things. All things. Subject. Now, you look at us. Look at this. Let's just look at us here. Now, okay, this is verse 8. Now, in putting everything in subjection to him, you know, this is mankind in general, he left nothing outside his control. Nothing. Nothing outside God's control. At present, we do not yet see everything in subjection to him. Okay, this is very easy. We don't see everything in subjection to man right now. Does anybody have an experience of this verse? At the present, we do not see everything being subject to him. You look at mankind. You know, when I'm saying man, you say, well, this is Christ as a man. This should be that. No, no, no. Think of Adam. Adam, God said, let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowls of the air, over every creeping thing, over all the earth. So this is God's thought. Man should reign. And here, we don't see everything subject. We don't see. Oh my goodness. The things that we are subject to are too numerous to enumerate. Sometimes we can't follow God because there's no coffee. Other times we are unable to follow God because of the weather. Other times we're not able to follow God because we're in a funk. And emotionally, we can't handle. Other times, we're unable to follow God because of money. The love of money, the lack of money, the presence of money, all of it has shown itself to subject us away from following God. I appreciate everyone that served at the fair two Sundays ago. It was great. And yeah, I just want to say thank you for putting yourself out there like that. And one story from the fair two fairs ago, last summer. You know, the air conditioning was broke in this building. Remember that last year? It's like an oven in here. I finally called them and said, this building is unusable. It's unusable. And this lady came in. And she said, you know, I'm interested in your church, and I have one question to ask you. Are you going to fix the air conditioning? And then I said, well, you know, we're talking to the landlords about that currently, but I have no guarantee. She looked at me, and she said, I'm sorry. And walked away and never visited. Now you think about the grand scheme of things. Okay, well, standing before the judgment seat of Christ, and you know, who knows, I might maybe taking this way out, but standing before the judgment seat of Christ, and then God will say this, okay, I told you to go. And what happened? And then she would say this. There was no air conditioning. We're subject to so many things. Lust. Oh my goodness. Sin. Oh my. Our flesh, yeah. That website. That 3-inch cigarette. But it's important here to see the next line. At present, we do not yet see everything in subjection to Him. That's what we're talking about. But we see Him. Him. We see Him who for a little while was made lower than the angels, namely Jesus. Okay, you look at us. Look, God, if there's no air conditioning, I'm out of here. What am I subject to? I'm subject to air conditioning. I don't yet see all things subject to man. But you know what? I see Jesus. I see Jesus. He was made lower than the angels. This is just following the Psalms. The writer of Hebrews says this. Look, Jesus followed the Psalms. He was made lower than the angels. He was crowned with glory and honor because of the suffering of death, so that by the grace of God, He might taste death on behalf of everyone. It's like, you have to see. You know what you have to see? You have to see Jesus was a real man. He followed the pathway of man. He followed that same pathway. And then the next verse. It was fitting that He, for whom and by whom all things exist, in bringing many sons to glory, should make the founder of their salvation perfect through suffering. Let me review and set the stage for this verse. This is the verse. God's intention of man is amazing. Man should be ruling. He should be above. He should be crowned with glory and honor. But we don't see it yet. We're beset by so many things. But you know who we see? We see Jesus. Okay, He was made lower than the angels, and He was crowned with glory and honor, and He tasted death on behalf of everything. And now here we are. Here we are. This is where we are in verse 10. We're the many sons. You know who the many sons are? All the believers.
We are.
We are. We're the many sons. And you know where this verse says we're being led? We are being led to glory. And what happens in glory? What happens in glory is, well, according to the direct context here, you're crowned with glory. That means everything is under you. Crowned with glory, fulfilling the intention that God had for your life. God is leading us. And you know what was fitting? The Greek word is prepo, apropos, apropos. It was fitting for God that there would be a leader in leading us to glory. There would be a captain, there would be a pioneer, and this is Jesus. It was fitting for Him, you know, by whom are all things, through whom are all things, in leading many sons to glory. So it's like, God is going to lead us there. What is my salvation? My salvation is not just air conditioning from hell. No, my salvation is being led to glory. It's being led to glory. And there's a leader, and it's Jesus. And the leader, the pioneer of that pathway to glory is the Lord Jesus Christ. And you know what? He was made perfect through sufferings. He's like the, and this is where you have to get into the, like, wait a minute, I thought he was perfect. He was God. But you have to remember, he was a real man, and he had to be made perfect also as a human being. And the way God did this was through sufferings. Through sufferings. He is the founder of your salvation. So you ask, like, where am I right now? I am a man, a human being. I had a great purpose from God to be in glory. And I fell terribly. I failed at it. And now I'm on this pathway to glory. I'm a son of God. I'm on the pathway to glory. And up there is a leader, a captain. You could say a pioneer. You could say an originator, a progenitor, somebody who has cut the way before me to get into glory. And who is that? That is Jesus. Okay, now he had certain experiences on his pathway. And you know what those experiences were? Sufferings. Sufferings. And he had certain experiences that made him perfect and made him complete and made him adequate, fitting as my captain of my salvation, as the author of my salvation. Suffering. It was suffering. And we'll get into different things that he suffered in a little bit. I'll just go quickly. But you know that in this pathway to glory, we all need a pioneer. We need an author of our salvation. And that is where Jesus comes in. He suffered. Suffered. I'll say three things. Three things. Three reasons he suffered. Number one, the big one is he suffered for my propitiation, for my redemption. That means he suffered for the forgiveness of my sins. It's necessary, but not quite complete. He also suffered so that he would give me a pattern and an example of a person going on the pathway to glory. And you know what's involved in that? Affliction and suffering. Affliction and suffering. You know, the pathway to glory is go through affliction. And we don't like to talk about it. We don't like to talk about it. Hey, you want to become a Christian so you have affliction? No, don't tell people that. Just tell people, hey, you want to become a Christian so you get into glory? Amen. And then according to the Bible, you're saying the same thing. And you could say, well, Rex, are you saying I should seek out suffering? I'm saying, don't be stupid. Let me tell you, suffering will come. You can either suffer for Pan Am or suffer for Jesus. You can suffer for less than that. You can suffer for sin or suffer for Jesus. Suffering will come. Suffering in your life will come. And let me tell you, there is a captain, a pioneer, who has been made perfect through the sufferings he bore. And so you kind of see, you know how I'm going to glory? I'm going to glory in the same way he did. It's the common lot of human beings, suffering. When you have suffering in your life, you know, you could say this, God, I want to get out of it. He may not answer your prayer to get you out. But the other way to look at suffering is, Lord, may this suffering bring me to glory. And you know what? He will answer that prayer. The other thing, the third reason Jesus went through sufferings is this. So he can help us in our suffering. The pathway to the glory that God is leading us is beset with sufferings. It's a long endurance race. I'm not talking about 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. I'm talking about your whole life. And there are certain kinds of sufferings that are dramatic impacts. You know, all of a sudden, this kind of thing happens. And there are other sufferings that are chronic, just long term. And in all of those cases, you look at the life of Jesus and you say, you know what? He was perfected through sufferings, and he is able to help me right now in this suffering. Why? He went through it. Look at the last part of Hebrews 2, 18. I won't read the whole verse. For because he himself has suffered when tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted. He was a real man, a real man. If you think Jesus was some kind of magical robot who could always follow God at every step of the way, you're far from the New Testament. Far from the real Jesus. No, he was a real man. He was tempted. You know what Jesus' temptation was? I don't think he had a temptation of this, like, oh, I just want to steal this computer. Wow, that'd be great. No, that's kind of a sinful thing, you know. I don't think he was looking at a girl, whoa, you know, like, no. This is a temptation familiar to a fallen, lustful human being. But my, was he tempted as a man to deviate from the will of God. Oh my goodness, it was a real temptation. He was really tempted. God, if there's any way, let this cup pass through me. That's what he prayed. But he was tempted to, you know, at any time he said this. When he was being arrested, he says, don't you know I could tell right now, I could right now call my father. And he would send so many legions of angels, and it would change the whole situation. At any time, as a human being, he could have said this, Father, I want it different. I want it different from your will, and I command it to be different. And that was his temptation his whole life. Why was he tempted like that? Because he was a real man, a real man, a real human being, not a robot, not something special, not somebody who had a special way out, as a real man. So this verse says, you know, he was tempted in all respects like us. That's the next one. But for because he himself suffered when tempted, he is able to help those being tempted. So let me tell you, this is the application. As a believer, we don't have to be under anything. And we can make a prayer like this. Jesus, I want to follow you, but they don't have air conditioning. And you know what Jesus would say? I can help that. Because, you know, I was tempted too. I was a real man. I am a real man. If you say, Jesus, I want to follow you, but I can't. I can't overcome this thing in me. He says, you know what? I'm the captain of your salvation, and I was tempted too. And you know, I can help that. I can minister aid to you. Why? I am a real man. You are a real human being. And if you look at this kind of life, you say this. There's nothing that we can face that will prevent us, legitimately prevent us, from following and serving God? You could say this: I used to be in my closet 1 hour, but now I have this baby. Jesus can say this: I can help that. I can tell you how to really enjoy me and pray to me while you're with your baby. You know why? I've been there. I wanna follow you, Lord, but I just have all these temptations. I have all these kind of like, I'm just looking at all these other things in the world. I'm distracted. He's like, I know what you mean. I didn't want to go to the cross. Let me just minister something to you. Let me minister. And you look at this kind of life and you say, wow, there could be a very violent suffering in my life. He understands. I can still follow God. There could be a long-term chronic condition of a lot of different flavors, a lot of different varieties, and you think like, this is so unfair. So unfair. And the Lord says, I know what you're going through. Why? Look at my life. Was my life fair? They put me on a cross. And I was tempted through the whole thing. I know what you're going through. I can minister something to you. And then you have this release from ever looking for the perfect life to follow the Lord in. No, I don't know if it exists. But I know one thing exists. Help exists. And why can he help? Because he was a real man. Lord, I'm subject to a 3-inch cigarette. I can't follow you. And Jesus would say, I know. I know. I'm able to help. I'm able to help. I'm able to author my salvation and pioneer my salvation for you. Well, as we're being led into glory, we have a marvelous captain. And it opens up a way for us to live a life. You know, maybe you say something like this: you know, Lord, my life is not right. My life is not right. I wish this unfairness would stop happening. Then maybe you go to God with that, and there's a little help rendered. And then it's like, you know, I still love you. You're a son of God. You're being brought unto glory. Hey, how about you just call one more person on the phone and pray with them? It's like, Lord, my life is not right. It's not fair. It's not whatever. And he's like, hey, how about you read one more chapter of the Bible? Lord, it's not right, it's not fair, it's not whatever. And he's like, yeah, I understand, I understand, I understand, I understand. Hey, how about you just try to have a Bible study with this person? And you look back in your life and you're like, how did I ever do that? I was serving God and it was never the right time. Lord, I don't feel right. It's like, yeah, yeah, I know, I know, I know. I know exactly what you mean. I know I had a lot of inner feelings. I had a lot of those things. But, hey, how about you just try to preach the gospel to your neighbor? Then you look back, I have no idea how I preached the gospel. How did I do that? I was such a mess. You know what? We have a captain of our salvation. And he is amazing. And why is he amazing? Because he was a real man. I'll stop there. Let's have a little prayer. Anyone's free to pray.